very polite and focused upon their drinks.
I eye her, trying to determine if she's lying, if she's covering up for the situation because she knows I'm already furious at her. I cup her chin, tilting her face up, and look for bruises or marks. There's nothing, and her clothing looks rumpled, but every button is in place, even the tightest one at the throat. I release her, resisting the urge to run my thumb over her pretty, plump mouth. Humph.
I ate a lot of onions to be as repellent as possible,
she tells me in a hopeful voice.
If that helps anything.
It doesn't, because now I know that she knows she was in danger and went anyhow. I'm going to ask you one more time, and you need to answer me honestly, I say, voice low and careful. Do I need to go in there and kill someone? I won't ask any more than that. Just tell me who, and I'll make it happen. I can hide the body where it will never be found. Already I'm thinking of tunnels that would be easy to collapse, who I'd need to bribe to look the other way when I descend into the ruins. She blinks up at me, then a smile spreads across her face.
You do that for me? I'm flattered.
It's not meant to be a compliment. I'm back to wanting to throttle her. I grab her by the arm and note that she does smell quite oniony. Just come on. Aspeth is silent as I drag her through the streets. Good. I hope she realizes what a mistake this was. I hope she's realizing that her loyalty is to the guild first, to me first. It occurs to me that I'm jealous. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. But as she won't tell me anything about who she was meeting, my mind continually circles back to the worst possible scenarios. Who else would you meet at midnight except an old flame? Is she looking for a way to back out of our marriage, then? Trying to get away from the beast she finds herself hitched to? Is that why she won't tell me what's going on? The thought makes my temper flare, and the painful tightness swell at the base of my cock. It's possessiveness that makes me furious. Aspeth is my wife. Has sworn that she'll take part in the Conquest Moon with me. Has sworn to help me out as I help her. This isn't about feelings, I remind myself, even as I furiously stomp my hooves on the cobblestones and glare at anyone who dares to walk down the same darkened streets as we do. Does it matter if she has a lover, I ask myself. A flame she left behind? She married you. She's in your bed. It shouldn't matter. But it does. The Conquest Moon and Taurian instinct are fucking with my head, demanding that I claim my woman, demanding that I fight anyone who tries to take her from me. A drunken group of men spill out of a nearby tavern, and she instinctively moves closer to me. They look rough and rowdy, and my protective instincts prick. There's an entire lineup of taverns in this part of town, all of them seedier than the last. Rather than drag Aspeth past and ask for trouble, I steer her toward the darkened alley to the side. Come on.
Is this the right way?
She protests, trotting after me. Shortcut.
It doesn't look shorter to me.
I want to growl at her to trust me, to quit asking so many questions. But instead, I simply tighten my grip on her arm and hurry her along. I know I'm rushing her, but I can let her yell at me when we get back to the dormitory. I know of far too many guild students who've been accosted by thieves on these streets after dark simply because someone thought they might have an artifact of value upon them. Stupid, but most thieves are stupid, or drunk, or both. We turn down a second alley, only to see a crowd of people outside another tavern, and then I realize my mistake. It's not a tavern. It's a brothel. Aspeth sucks in a sharp breath.
Are those... What are they doing?
The musky scent of sex carries on the breeze, making my knot tighten at the base of my shaft. It's an orgy in the street. I recognize it immediately. As the hand of the god falls more and more heavily upon his sons, the Taurians, we become far more hedonistic. It's not uncommon for Taurians to use sex workers to slake their thirsts as the moon rises. and public sex just adds another titillating edge to things. It's not surprising to me to see the multiple Taurians out in the alley with the brothel's women. It likely started with just one Taurian looking to get relief from one of the women who ply their wares against the alley wall due to the crowd in the brothel. From there, it escalated with multiple other sex workers and males joining in until the alley seems full of writhing, rutting bodies and the wet slap of hips meeting hips. At my side, Aspeth makes a strangled sound and immediately turns her back to them.
They're in the street,
she hisses.
Fornicating.
For some reason, her prissy words just piss me off. In less than 2 weeks, I'm going to be doing the exact same thing to her, just not in an alley. There's no time left to be missish about things. You should watch. The look she gives me is incredulous, her head jerking up. Her breathing is rapid, and in the low light, I can see there's a stain of blush on her cheeks.
It's not polite.
Damn politeness. When one of the Taurians raises his head and looks in our direction, I step to the side and pull her into the shadows so we won't get invited to join. She lets me tug her along, and I try to turn her around. She immediately tries to turn her back to the orgy once more, and I grab her and forcefully turn her around. I tighten one arm around her waist, pinning her against me, and with my other hand, I clamp her jaw in my grasp and force her head in their direction. Look at them, Aspeth. This is as good an education as any as to what you've agreed to do. She whimpers, going still in my arms. Her breath remains quick, panting. Holding her like this sets my senses on fire. I can smell all of her like this, erotic despite the oniony perfume. Her form is hot against mine, supple and firm. It makes my cock rise, and the sound of bodies slapping and the grunts of the bulls in the alley in front of us isn't helping. I want you to watch, I murmur in her ear. She trembles and I hesitate. Am I hurting you? Are you scared? Aspeth shakes her head as much as she can in my grip. She pants, and I follow her gaze to the nearest couple. It's a Taurian who has a woman bent over, her hands on the wall in front of her. Her tits spill out of a low-cut corset, bobbing violently with the force of the thrusting Taurian behind her. Her skirts are piled up to her waist, and the male has her by the hips, dragging them back as he works her over his cock. Watch them, I croon into her ear, still holding her jaw. I nuzzle against her neck, and when she makes a strangled sound of pleasure, I realize that Aspeth is enjoying the sight of them. It's her prudish upbringing that made her turn away. That ends tonight. I want her to see everything. I want her to get a good fucking look. I want her to sate her curiosity because I want her to want this. Want me just as much as I want her. I glance over at the male as he thrusts vigorously into the squealing woman. There are other couples twined together farther down the alley, but these two interest me. He's giving her quick, shallow thrusts, and I realize why. The female he's rutting reaches back and slaps at his hip, indicating that she needs a break, and he releases her, his wet, hard cock slipping free. Aspeth trembles at the sight of it. He's bigger than you expected, isn't he? I rub my muzzle against her ear, my hips grinding against her backside as I do. My cock is just as hard as the stranger's, need making me ache. I can't stop myself from pressing up against Aspeth, letting her know just how aroused I am. That's how big my cock is, little bird. I'm going to hollow you out when I take you, but I'll make it so fucking good you won't even care. She whimpers against my hand, and I stroke her cheek with my thumb. The Taurian gestures, and another female comes running forward, her bare tits bouncing. Her dress is falling off of her, and she's clearly enjoying the attentions of multiple Taurians tonight. She immediately assumes the position that the other female vacated, shoving her arse into the air as she plants her hands on the wall. There's an eager expression on her face.
He's got a knot,
the exhausted woman tells her, leaning against the wall nearby.
Mind your cunt.
Aspeth twitches in my grasp.
It's a bit early for that, ain't it?
The first woman says.
I like him,
is all the new woman says, and gives her ass a cheeky jiggle.
Do as you like. I can take it.
As the Taurian mounts her, I lean in close to whisper into Aspeth's ear. Some Taurians have the god's hand upon them at all times. Those males are cursed. Some say blessed to have a knot at all times. He must be one of them. Can you see it?
I can't see anything,
she whispers back to me.
It's too bloody dark.
I love that she sounds disappointed. I'd love to know what she's thinking. If the thought of the male knotting the woman in front of him arouses her like it does me, then again, a gentle brush of fabric arouses me right about now. I rock against her hips again and groan when she presses back against me.
Describe it to me,
Aspeth whispers.
Please.
His cock is thick, engorged with blood. I rub mine against her backside. At the base, there's a swelling that makes it thicker than usual, like a fist wrapped around the shaft when I sink into you. Her breath catches and she trembles, and at the same time the sex worker cries out with pleasure as the Taurian plunges into her. I'm going to fill your tight cunt so full. Some women don't like it, but it's because they've not been prepared. I'll make sure you're soaking wet and hungry for it, Aspeth. You'll want my knot, won't you?
Please,
she whispers, her gaze locked on the rutting couple. One of the Taurians gets impatient when his partner leaves. He grabs the nearest woman, who's being taken from behind, and shoves his cock into her mouth. She clasps his hips hungrily, and he shuttles between her lips. Aspeth makes a gaspy sound.
Is he... they...
In her mouth, aye. Not his knot, just sucking on his cock.
Oh.
She draws the word out in a long, gusty sigh.
Gods have mercy. I can't believe we're watching her.
You like the sight of it? She whimpers, and I think she does.
It looks so big.
Aye, but you can take it. I stroke my thumb against her soft jaw. Your mouth won't fit everything, but you can just lick a cock like a treat, like she's doing. A new sex worker arrives to the group and immediately drops to her knees, licking at the exposed sack of the Taurian fucking the woman's mouth. Aspeth moans, the sound soft and yearning.
But are you sure it will fit inside me?
Ah, the age-old question of virgins everywhere. Aye, I'll fit in your cunt, Aspeth. With my scent in your nose, you'll get slick. Slicker than you've ever been. It'll ensure you can take me. I'll ease into you gently at first, getting you stretched around my cock. She moans. The sound soft and yearning, and her hips rock against mine. I thrust against her backside again, and then because it feels so good, I keep doing it. I'm using her to rub myself off, but I don't fucking care, and I don't think Aspeth does either. I keep grinding against her plump backside, the rustle of fabric as I thrust betraying our actions. When I come, my knot swells. I'll be trapped inside your pussy, locked there until I've flooded you with my seed. I let my hand fall from her face and cup her between her thighs. She gasps again and then rocks against my hand. You've come so hard, over and over, as the woman in the alley cries out and the Taurian's hooves clack against the pavement. I suspect he's doing just that. I'm not looking at them any longer, though. I'm too focused on Aspeth's heavy-lidded eyes, the part of her lips, the hunger on her face. I drag my fingers over her clothed pussy, rubbing in love when she bites down on her lip, her eyes fluttering closed. And I'll make you feel so fucking good, I promise her. I vow it, Aspeth, because I like to watch you come. I like to watch it too damn much.
Please.
She whispers again, her eyes closing.
Make me come right now.
I groan, and any shred of control I had disappears. I turn Aspeth until she's pressed to the stone wall of the alley, against an armorer's stall. Her cheek presses against the stone as I tilt her hips out and mimic the position of the couple we were watching. Her little whimper excites me, as does the spreading of her thighs. She's still fully clothed, as am I, but it doesn't matter. I push her thighs farther apart and then thrust against the juncture there. Aspeth moans, the sound encouraging me. I push up the front of her skirts and rub harder against the bloomers she wears underneath. I'm not sure if this'll feel as good for her as it does for me, but if she needs more, I'll give her more. I shove my hand into the front of her bloomers and seek out her clit. Her cunt is soaked, slippery with arousal, and I drag my fingers through it before circling her clit. She jerks against the wall, gasping, and I rest a finger against her clit, then drive into her from behind, letting the momentum of our bodies do the work for me.
Gods!
Aspeth whimpers, shuddering against me.
Oh, gods!
They're watching us, just like we were watching, I tell her with ragged breaths. Give them a show, little bird. When she comes, quaking against my fingers, I lose it. I burrow against her, driving between her thighs as if sheer force can somehow tear the layers of clothing between us and let me sink home into her cunt. I buck, holding her in place and using her as she trembles, my breath so hot and heavy that it steams the air around us. I'm so lost in the moment that when I come, it's surprising to feel the heat soak my pants instead of shooting into her. My thighs shiver with the force of my release, and my tail lashes so hard that it smacks the wall next to her. I collapse over Aspeth, pinning her against the stone as she gulps in deep breaths. A quick glance over at the orgy shows that the couple we were watching is still there, the male with a sated expression as he rubs the sex worker's shoulders. He looms over her, their hips joined, and as I watch, he reaches up and squeezes her tit, enjoying the moment. Unlucky bull. What must it be like to have a knot every day? To be constantly grasped in the insistent fist of lust. To know that every time you take your female, you're trapping her under you. Old Garish must truly test those that he places his hand upon. Then again, I can't complain about how he's treating me. I ease off Aspeth, catching my breath, and adjust the now wet crotch of my pants against my throbbing cock. I want to pull Aspeth against me and cradle her tight. I want to lick the taste of her off my fingers and savor making her come again. I want to drag her to the nearest bed and lap between her thighs for hours. But then I'm reminded that we don't have hours, because she needs to sleep. We've been running her ragged with drills and training, and instead of resting, Aspeth has spent her time sneaking off to meet someone. Someone she won't tell me about. It's like cold water poured over my ardor. I shove her skirts down and step away, but the small, vindictive part of me can't help but lean in as she adjusts her clothing. Let that be a lesson for you. Her huff of outrage tells me that my comment stings her pride.
24. Asbeth, 5 days before the conquest moon. I yawn as we stand in line at the guild hall, ignoring Gwenna when she elbows me. I know what she'll say. It's my fault I was up so late. And it was. The past few days of training have left me so exhausted that I should be sleeping like a babe. But I couldn't fall asleep last night. Too many things were racing through my mind. I fret over my husband, I fret over my friends, I fret over father in the hold. Father loves to feast and carouse and attend parties. What he doesn't love is the actual day-to-day minutiae that comes with tending to a hold. He doesn't think he should have to worry over debts or bills or purchasing artifacts. He'll be completely clueless about the attack until it's too late. Can I send a message somehow? Do I worry him, knowing that there's no money to pay additional knights anyhow? That there are no artifacts to defend the hold should Barnabas continue with this takeover? I worry that saying nothing is the wrong choice, the selfish choice. Because if I say something, it will almost certainly be traced back to me. Is it better to try to influence things here? To possibly offer up the promise of funds or some other sort of compensation if anything is found? The fact that Barnabas is throwing money at the guild means that his father is low on useful artifacts. Or isn't supporting Barnabas in this particular venture. If no one finds anything useful, will he give up? I wonder if Hawk is going to miss me while I'm gone. Things haven't been cozy between us since that night in the alley. I still throb with arousal every time I think about it, and how he'd held me, how he'd pounded between my thighs, and then pushed me away. It's been days, and we've been cordial during training, but bed has been lonely. He either doesn't come to bed or doesn't speak to me. I feel like I've lost something precious, and it hurts. The bed feels cold without him, and entirely not right. It's strange to be in his quarters without him, and even though Squeaker loves to sprawl on Hawk's side of the bed and rub her orange fur all over his pillows, I still find the bed strange when it's just me. After our interlude in the streets, he didn't come to bed that night. Said he had work to do. Since then, it's been a round of excuses in private. He's made it clear that no one else needs to know we're having problems, but each time he leaves me alone to go on patrol or to check gear, my heart aches. And like every other night in which he isn't in bed, I barely sleep. I'm regretting it now. I should be full of enthusiasm and excitement this morning, and instead I'm dragging behind the others in my five as we crowd into the guild hall behind Magpie. There's something about her that seems a little off this morning. It's hard to describe, like the hard edges have been softened. There's something almost lackadaisical about her demeanor, and it's puzzling. She yawns as we wait in line. Not too much longer, and then we'll get going. Somehow when I thought of wild adventure and tunnel crawling, this wasn't what I had in mind, Gwenna tells me as we shuffle forward in line. I have to admit that she's right. The reality is far more bureaucratic. We're standing in line in the guild hall, along with a dozen other fledgling teams, waiting to be recorded in the logbooks. We have to request which tunnel we'll be heading into, and we'll be assigned a series of colored, numbered flags to denote where we're excavating.
It's to ensure teams don't tunnel on top of one another, Magpie had explained as we got in line. And to avoid tunnel collapses if too many people are working the same area. Also, if we tell the guild where we're digging, it makes it easier for them to rescue us if something goes wrong.
What could go wrong?
Meriden had asked. Magpie had just laughed in her face. So, that didn't give us a ton of confidence. I glance over at Meriden. She's near the front of the line, standing behind Magpie, her pack on her back. Her tight black curls are covered in a festive head wrap. And as I watch, one of the men from the next line over reaches out and tugs on the jaunty bow over her ear. She turns, glaring.
I don't think this cap is guild standard, fledgling.
The man sneers. Who are you, the guild uniform monitor? Lark immediately comes to Meriden's defense. Leave her alone.
Bold of you to wear that at a guild event when you're trying to be taken seriously.
The man says, flicking at her bow again. Meriden blinks rapidly, her lips pressed together, and she looks as if she might cry.
They're not trying to be taken seriously.
Jeers another.
Everyone knows they're trying to fuck their way into guild membership.
He turns toward me and gestures.
Just like that one did.
Ouch. But he's not wrong. Isn't that what I'm doing? I married my teacher just to have a chaperone. As Lark argues with the team in line next to us, I scan the room for my husband. Hawk didn't come to bed last night, and he wasn't at breakfast this morning, nor did he show when we packed our things. It's almost as if he's avoiding me, though Magpie didn't seem concerned. Then again, she's not concerned with much of anything right now. Lark looks as if she's ready to brawl with the men in line next to us, and Magpie couldn't care less. Her gaze is wandering the room, eyeing the other teams that are clustered in line, waiting for their assignments. All right, Gwenna says, moving forward and separating the men from Meriden and Lark. A man can suck a dick as easily as a woman can, so someone sleeping their way into guild membership isn't a female-exclusive sort of thing. She gives the men a tight smile. And I'm sure your teacher wouldn't want to hear about what you've been up to late at night, fledgling. The man flushes and steps away, only to have the other men in line jeer at him. You know him? I hiss to Gwenna when she turns back to us. I know his type. Every servant does. She shrugs. Where's your husband this morning? I have no idea. My face heats. He's avoiding me. Her brows go up. He is? I nod. He might be mad at me. I didn't tell him who I was meeting the other night. Nor should you, she whispers. No good can come of any of that. Gwenna knows things with Barnabas didn't go well, that he threatened me, and that I threatened to marry someone else, that things ended up going nowhere and I've been uneasy ever since. No more messages have come in, have they? She shakes her head. Gwenna's been getting friendly with the repeater who brings the mail just so she can snatch it up first and hide any messages I might get. There's been no other contact from Barnabas, and that makes me just as nervous as that first message. I don't know what he's up to, I fret. If he's making moves or if he's lying low and waiting to see what is found in the tunnels. He might be waiting to see what you do, Gwenna suggests. Ugh, she might be right. I wish bad people came with a glowing beacon over their heads that said, avoid. We need an artifact like that. Mucking prick is trying to ruin everything I've been working for. Oh, strong language for a lady. She nudges me playfully. I just wish he hadn't figured out I was in the city. He said he recognized you that day in the woods. A guilty expression comes over Gwenna's face. I was hoping he hadn't remembered me. He said he recognized you because we were always together. She nods. He tried to get me to go to his rooms once and I turned him down. I didn't think he'd recognize me because, well, It happens to all servant women far too often. Perhaps he's more sensitive to rejection than most.
I stare at her agog. He propositioned my maid. When was this?
Right after your engagement party, I think. She winces. Don't hate me.
After my engagement party? When he'd declared love to me? When we'd kissed in the gardens and I'd allowed him to fondle my breasts and thigh? That ass! I'm not mad at you. I'm furious at him.
Yes, well, most nobles can't be trusted to keep it in their pants. Gwenna shakes her head. I think they're too used to getting everything they want. Hawk's different, though.
I blink at her. I married him for the chaperoning, nothing more.
It might have started like that, but I've seen the way you two look at each other. Tell me there's nothing there except for convenience. No fascination at all?
My face grows hotter by the moment. I can't think of anything to say.
How are we looking at each other? Like he's tongued me between my thighs? Like he shoved his hand down my bloomers in an alley and made me come? Like he made me watch other people having sex so I could see what a knot is like? Like,
that's so. Shut up.
Next in line?
The guild clerk calls out, and then we're up. Our names and positions are carefully recorded. I'm listed as Bulwark, and Kip is listed as our sword. Gwenna's the gear master in charge of supplies, Meriden's the healer, and that leaves Lark as our navigator. We all look a little alarmed at that. Magpie just waves a hand.
We're just trying it on. I won't let you get lost. Have a little more faith.
The way she says it is so loose and lazy, it doesn't exactly fill me with confidence, however.
The guild clerk licks his fingers and thumbs through the pages of a logbook, expression one of complete boredom.
I show that Magpie is the guild leader and Hawk is the guild leader's assistant, which will be going into the tunnels with the fledgling team.
Me, Magpie says. Hawk's away on a rescue mission.
Another? I blurt out before I can help it. Seriously? She turns to look at me and then shrugs.
Someone needed rescuing and the pay was right. We're short-handed on Taurians right now due to the conquest moon. But I'm sure you know about that.
The smug way she says it makes me want to scream. Or fall into a puddle of shame. He's tired.
We're all fucking tired.
Magpie says in a weary voice.
Work still has to be done.
I am really starting to dislike her. I'm also strangely hurt that Hawk left on another mission without saying anything to me. I know it's just a marriage of convenience, but surely he could say something to me as I head off to the tunnels for the first time. Wish me luck. Tell me he's going to miss me. Gods, my head is scrambled over him. The clerk scribbles something else down, and we're assigned a set of slate blue flags for R5.
Lucky,
is all he says, not looking up from the book he's furiously scribbling in.
Bringing any artifacts with you?
Just a dowsing rod,
Magpie says. He looks up and smirks.
Really, that party trick?
What's a dowsing rod? Meriden asks.
It's a stick, Magpie tells us. But they say if you have old Prillian ancestry, you have magic in your blood. The dowsing rod will point you toward whatever you're looking for.
So it's a stick?
The clerk says flatly, expression deadpan.
You're bringing a stick.
A dowsing rod,
Magpie states again.
Don't discourage my students.
I'm gonna write down stick.
The clerk replies.
Any other items to declare?
K
Kip walks up to Magpie and taps her on her leg. Tap, tap, tap.
She glances down at him and then nods. Right. We've also got a Slitherskin house.
Gods help me.
The clerk says, but writes it down anyhow. He slaps the flags down onto the table along with a pass.
Please declare any tunnel with your guild flags. Please do not intrude upon another's flag tunnel. Should you run into trouble, activate your beacon and a rescue team will be sent down as quickly as possible.
He grabs a small glass bowl with a swirling fog inside it and sets it on the table.
Your beacon. Any questions?
Magpie scoops up the objects.
None. Thank you. We're heading for Drop 13.
His eyes widen as he writes, and I realize it's not a great choice.
Luck to you. You'll need it. But then again, maybe you won't. You do have a stick, after all.
He smirks. Magpie ignores him, turning to gesture at us.
Follow me, fledglings.
The guild clerk waves a hand as we shuffle behind Magpie carrying our packs.
Next team, move up.
I'm shoved from behind, my backpack jostling. Someone sticks a foot out, and Locke nearly falls on her face. The room fills with male laughter, and her face turns apple red with fury. She whirls around, but Meriden grabs her by the arm and drags her away before she can pick a fight. Let's just go, she whispers. We have better things to do. With the pass in hand, Magpie leads us out of the hall and down another corridor. My heart thumps as I realize we're heading in a direction we've never gone before. There are guards down the hall, all of them wearing guild uniforms, and I see tapestries and bird symbols of the great guild masters who came before, Blackwing and Stonebeak, the legendary Stork, and of course, Spockanus, the Swan, the guild founder. Magpie's symbol is there, too, but it's small, and for a moment I feel such pride and joy that I'm on her team. This is my dream. I'm about to do what I've always dreamed of. My heart is in my throat, tears pricking my eyes. My heart feels so full. No matter what else happens, I will cherish this day forever. There's another guild member at the end of the hall, and we present our pass to him.
Drop 13, eh? Good luck.
I glance over at Gwenna, brows furrowed. Is there something wrong with Drop 13, do you think? She shrugs, adjusting her pack as she walks. Her gaze goes to Magpie. But then, the double doors at the end of the hall are opening, and I hold my breath, ready to get my first glimpse of the secretive entrance to the ruins of Old Prell. It's something none of the books I've read have ever gone into detail on, and I've wondered about it. Is it a giant tunnel mouth? Another door with multiple doorways? Layers like a cake? I'm so very curious that I'm practically bouncing in place, waiting for my turn to pass through and see. Magpie leads us out and into a muddy courtyard full of holes. For a moment, I'm reminded of the field outside of town, the one where you can dig up your own artifacts. Disappointment crashes over me. There's a large wall encircling the courtyard, closing off what must be leagues and leagues of the crowded city's apex, and it looks strangely deserted compared to the clustered buildings outside. I can still hear people talking in the streets nearby, which is jarring. There's mud everywhere, true. But there are also a lot of rocks, and the pathway we take is cordoned off with rope. Magpie walks briskly through the strange courtyard as if she knows exactly where she's going. We follow behind her, single file, and pass another team clustered up near their leader. As we move farther in, I see crumbling walls of old brick amidst the muddy paths, and my heart clenches with excitement once more. These truly are the ruins of Old Prell. There are holes all over the place, too.
Not small holes dug by spades. These holes are big enough to drive a wagon through. And I think of the small spade in my bag and the staff I carry with the pointed end. Neither of these tools seem big enough to do the level of digging I'm looking at. As I watch, someone pushes a mine cart forward, and a guild member runs a wand through the air. A shimmering portal opens, and the cart is pushed through. Another one comes through the portal, this one empty. I gasp and tap Gwenna on the shoulder. Did you see that? Seems like a shitty use for an artifact, she says, and sounds spectacularly unimpressed. Where do you think it goes? Does it matter? Nowhere important if they're just using it to dump dirt instead of selling it to some holder for top coin. She has a point. I'm still entranced, though, and I watch as the portal wavers and then flickers out again. The exasperated guildman waves the wand in the air again, reopening it, and another man pops through with an empty mine cart. I eye the men crawling all over the anthill of the ruins. Everyone's wearing guild uniforms, but only the one with the wand has the patch of someone who's passed the guild tests. Everyone else is wearing apprentice colors. I move forward and tap Lark on the shoulder. Ask Magpie why there are so many apprentices here.
Magpie has ears, our guild master calls back. And those aren't apprentices, at least not right now. Those are repeaters.
Oh, repeaters. The fledglings who didn't pass guild testing and were dropped by their masters. They're doing manual labor to assist the guild in hopes that another master will be impressed by their work ethic and give them another chance. I stare at the men hard at work, at the resentful looks they shoot in our direction as we walk through. This doesn't seem good at all. It's a setup that's positively asking for abuse. I need to say something to Hawk about it. But then I spot a broken cornice at the edge of a crumbling brick wall at knee height. The blurry form is obvious to me, and all the thoughts fall from my head at the sight. It's an old Prelian carving, late period. I rush forward and collapse next to the cornice, touching it with hesitant reverence. By all the gods, even though it's been worn down by time and weather, I can still see the stylized eagle that was so very popular with late Prelian architecture. It's an amazing example and looks to be made out of the marble they favored in the late period. My fingers trace along the outstretched wings, and I'm in awe. To think that I can see this up close, to think that people just walk past this every day as if it's nothing. Someone clears her throat nearby. I turn and see Magpie, her hands on her hips.
If you're done fondling the rocks, can we get going?
Oh, but the cornice, the eagle, I stammer, covering it with my arms as if to protect it. Late Prelian architecture, it's just sitting here in the courtyard. Someone could hit it with a shovel. She gives me an exasperated look.
Where are we going, Aspeth?
Is this a trick question? Drop 13?
We are going into the ruins of Old Prel. It's full of rocks, just like that one. So get up and let's go look at those other rocks. Yes.
Reluctantly, I get to my feet. I don't want to leave it behind. It's so damned beautiful. I don't understand how they aren't scooping it up to put into a museum or a treasury. But I want to see Old Prel, too. And I want to dig in the ruins. And I need artifacts. It hurts me physically to leave the carved cornice behind. I feel it in my heart. But I can't stay behind in the mud and with all these glaring men with shovels. I get to my feet, dusting off my trousers and adjusting my ill-fitting clothes. Satisfied that I'm following again, Magpie turns and marches once more. Gwenna gives me a sympathetic look.
More than anyone, she understands my obsession with Old Prell. We follow behind Magpie as she makes her way through the enormous field littered with rocks and gigantic holes surrounded by scaffolding. As we walk past, a flag with the number 8 in bold yellow is hung on a pole. Behind the pole, a cluster of guildmen are being lowered into a hole in what looks like an enormous basket. I have to admit, I didn't picture this. When I imagined guild life, I thought of adventures in the tunnels, but not of how anyone got to the actual tunnels. It's not very glamorous. Again, I'm reminded of an anthill with all the holes dug out. Magpie turns, holding our blue flag out to a pit monitor.
Drop 13, she announces. Magpie and her fledglings.
He laughs.
Drop 13, eh? Good luck with that.
Why does everyone keep saying that? Locke asks.
The man waves us forward, taking us to the last of the 4 holes open in his quarry area. We walk past the other 3, and I lean over one, but it's too dark to see anything inside except the rope and pulley leading down.
13 is just a bold choice, is all,
he says.
Unlucky number 13.
Why is it unlucky? She prompts.
Because no one finds fuck all at drop 13.
The man says helpfully. We all turn to stare at Magpie. Why did we pick it if it's notoriously bereft of artifacts? I ask.
Because you're fledglings and it's most important that you get practice? Calm down.
She lifts her chin at the attendant.
Show us to our basket. We're late already.
He pulls it from its anchored tether at the side of the hole that must be drop 13. There's a bit of rock skittering in as he drags the basket forward. Magpie steps forward and helps him steer it over the large, gaping hole the size of a well. I watch them work, a little fascinated, and a lot alarmed. Gwenna leans toward me.
She might have a good feeling about things, but I don't. You think she picked this one because she doesn't expect us to find anything? That it's just an excuse to look busy?
I glance over at our leader. She's climbing into the basket and adjusting the ropes with a skill that speaks of years of practice. Why would she go to all that trouble?
Just to get away from Hawk judging her for a few days? You know he's not happy with her.
I think Hawk isn't happy with anyone. I can't help but think of that night in the alley, how he'd grabbed my jaw and made me watch, how he'd flung me away from him afterward like I was garbage, and then immediately abandoned me when we got home. It made me feel small and dirty and unwanted.
I don't know about that. I've seen the way he watches you. If he's not into you, he's fooling us all.
Her words make me flash. Let's focus on Magpie, because talking about her doesn't make my belly flutter.
You think she's setting us up? That she doesn't want us to find anything?
Gwenna shrugs, her gaze locked on Meridin and Kip as they climb into the basket. The Slitherskin is agile as he trots in, his shell bouncing merrily. But Meridin looks terrified as she peeks over the edge.
All I'm saying is that the simple answer to weird behavior is the likely answer.
And what's the simple answer?
That she's drinking again.
She swore she'd stop, I protest.
She wouldn't. Promises are easy, Gwenna says with a shrug. Come on, I think it's our turn to get into the basket.
I want to continue arguing. But then Locke steps into the basket and the entire thing sways, banging against the lip of the hole and sending a scatter of pebbles down into the darkness. Meridin squeals in distress, clinging to Kip's house, and knocking poor Kip flat onto his belly. Locke topples on top of him, and Magpie nearly falls over as well.
Hold onto the basket,
Magpie barks. And the next few moments are chaos as everyone rights themselves. The basket sways above the hole dangerously.
the basket handler clinging to the rope on the other side of the pulley and frowning mightily at us.
You two, quit whispering and get on. The sooner we descend, the sooner we can make some coin.
Her words cheer me up. Maybe she wants this to go well, after all. Gwenna's just imagining things. I move forward, climbing into the basket and clutching at the side when it sways crazily. Oh, gods!
You get used to the movement, Magpie says. You just need practice.
Gwenna is the last to get on board and clings to me as she squeezes in. The basket is full, and Meriden's pack is pressing into my side even as Gwenna holds on to me. We're packed like salted fish in a barrel, and it's a good thing that teams are fives, or else they'd need bigger baskets. I imagine a basket with Hawk's hawking form in it, and imagine pressing up against him, and my stomach flutters again.
Ready to go?
The basket handler calls.
Send us down.
Magpie calls back, slapping the side of the basket.
We'll let you know when we're ready to come up.
The basket jerks, and we all give a little scream. Well, except Magpie, who just laughs at us. Then it begins to lower slowly, and again, I feel like I'm being sent down a well. I crane my head, even as I cling to the side of the basket, and eye our leader. So, how does this work? How do we get back up?
Someone always monitors the basket lines, she says. Rain or shine, morning or night. We run one of our flags up the rope and they'll send a basket back down for us.
It sounds like an imprecise system, and I have a million questions. Like, what happens if we can't send the flag up? What happens if a rope breaks? What happens if we're down here too long? Magpie's short with her answers, and dismissive, as if she's bored already. I'll have to ask Hawk when I see him again. If he doesn't hate me, that is. If he feels like talking to me after our alley incident. Then again, I'm his wife. He'll have to at least talk to me to say, I want a divorce, even if he doesn't want to not me anymore. My thighs tighten at the thought. Surely he'll want at least that, right? Surely. My mind blanks out as the basket lurches lower, and then faint lighting glimmers through the cave. As we go down, I see a pocket watch hanging on a nail, the face of it glowing bright and lighting the cave. Farther down, there's a teacup hanging by the handle. Also glowing. More scattered objects light the way down, artifacts that have been determined to be useless except for their ability to light the well of the cavern. And I want to grab each one and examine it to see the glyphs. What symbols did they use for the magic? Are they late Prelian or early? Why would you want a teacup to glow with the brightness of the sun? The basket creaks lower and lower, and I crane my head to glimpse each artifact as we sink lower. I'm pretty sure I see Magpie raise a flask to her lips, but I say nothing. I don't want to lose a moment of this, because the narrow neck of the cave that we've been descending, drop 13, opens up, and then I can see the enormous cavern that is the ruins of Old Prell. Tears spring to my eyes as the sight spreads before us. It's the most beautiful, wondrous thing I've ever seen. I've heard all the stories 1,000 times, that Prell was a mighty kingdom full of wizardry and magic, and that 1,000 years ago the gods, or a nasty earthquake, struck, and it sank below the earth. It turns out that the city itself was built upon a network of caverns, and so the ruins themselves are scattered in a warren of tunnels, some big and some small, and it's this that the guild guards so fiercely. There's a large open chamber in the cavern, and the ruins of ancient buildings spill from every rocky ledge. Toppled columns are covered with moss, and water drips onto broken pieces of statues. Everywhere I look,
There are pieces of old Prell scattered like a puzzle, and I'm left with the impression that if only I had the time and strength, I could pull it all together again and remake the city once more. I can't wait to get out and explore. But then our basket continues to descend, and I have to bite back a whimper of protest as we pass through the massive, fascinating cavern and keep going lower. The walls grow tighter, our basket smacking against the side and jostling us.
Not much farther,
Magpie says as it gets dark again. There are no artifacts this deep to light the way. Can't we go back up? I ask. I'd love to get another look at the big cavern.
It's all picked over. Trust me, there's nothing there.
A faint light gleams from below the basket, bleeding through the slats we stand upon. It grows brighter as the basket lurches farther down, and the well opens up wider. A crystal egg gives off faint light, illuminating the newest tunnel and showing more ropes off to the side, and what looks like a side tunnel.
Everyone hold on, Magpie says. This next part requires some skill.
She pulls a giant staff from the side of the basket. There's a hook on the end of it, and she maneuvers it out to the ropes dangling nearby. When she hooks it, she pulls hard, and we surge forward to the lip of the side tunnel. Everyone clings to the edges of the basket, but I'm relieved to note that we stop descending, and Magpie slowly pulls us toward the side. Once we're close enough, I see additional rope loops hanging from the walls, and at her indication, we reach for them. With a few more tugs, we manage to pull the basket onto the edge of the platform of the side tunnel.
Everyone out! Don't forget your gear.
Magpie sounds cheerful, as if she has great affection for the tunnels. I can't blame her. I'm excited to explore down below. Who knows what wonders we're going to see? Anticipation makes me twitchy, and I almost leap out of the basket after Lark, eager to get started. One by one, we get into the tunnel and have a look around. It's one of the smaller tunnels that we've passed, and yet it's still large enough that Meriden could stand on my shoulders and not touch the ceiling. There are layers of rock here, the walls striped horizontally with different layers of sediment, but it's all been cleared enough that we can walk comfortably.
Formations, please,
Magpie calls out, and then makes a strange noise.
Did you just belch?
Lark asks her, suspicious.
No.
Gwenna nudges me. An I told you so look in her eyes. Great. She's drinking, and that means we're probably on our own with barely enough training. I wish Hawk were here. He can yell at me all he wants. I just feel safe when he's around. But he's not here, and we've got to make the best of things until we get back to the surface. I'm torn between wanting to find something so we can emerge in triumph, and not wanting to find anything at all, because fuck Barnabas.
Formation, I echo. All right, should we tie ourselves together now? The sword goes at the front of the line, right?
No need to tie yet. See that rope?
Magpie moves to the wall and tugs on something I'd missed. There's indeed a rope bolted to the wall here, spaced out metal hooks holding it in place.
Once we run out of handrails, then we'll be in proper digging territory. Then you can rope yourselves together.
So this isn't where we're digging?
Gwenna asks. Magpie laughs.
Oh, gods, no. This is the entrance. We've got to go much deeper in if we expect to find anything at all. It'll take a few hours to get where we're headed.
Instead of being dismayed, I'm rather excited. Several hours means a lot of ruins to view.
I'll take it. Kip trots ahead of me, and I take my place behind him in formation as the bulwark.
The shield I've been assigned is still strapped to my back, holding my pack in place. But I guess we get that one out when we tie together? It feels strange to have to trust Magpie. and I come to the realization that I don't really trust her at all. That's depressing. My childhood hero is utterly tarnished. Nothing to do about it now. I grab the rope on the wall and squeal in disgust because it's damp and feels gross to the touch. Meriden also makes an unhappy noise about the rope. It's wet.
Don't be such a baby, Magpie chides. You'll be wishing for that rope in a few hours.
25. Asbeth. It feels as if we're walking forever into the shadows. The artifacts lighting the way get fewer and farther between, and the rope handhold leads us deep into the tunnels. It slopes ever downward, and at one point the descent is so steep and slick that Gwenna almost falls, and it's only the rope and Lark's hand grabbing her pack that keeps her from sliding ahead of us. The caverns are wet and drippy. I'd always wondered why there were so few textiles and books from Old Prell, and now I know. Nothing would survive in this constant damp. Our clothes are warm at least, and I'm grateful for the layers I have on, the trousers and the skirt over them, as well as my corset, my blouse, and my thick cloak. I've taken to wearing skirts over my trousers on the rainy days, because my arse clings to my pants when the fabric's wet, and Magpie said it was indecent. So far she hasn't said anything about my modification to the uniform, which is good. Neither has Hawk. I wonder if he thinks my arse is too obvious when it's wet outside, too. There's not as much to see as I'd hoped, either. Oh, there's the occasional bit of a broken building jutting from a wall, but around it, the rock has all been hollowed out, like a cored apple, and there's nothing left to investigate. True to Magpie's word, though, there are plenty of cornices and broken statues and bricks littering the rubble. After a while, even those aren't exciting, especially when you can't stop to investigate them. The tunnel opens up into a large bowl, and then the cavern splits two ways. Off to the left side, there's a bright green flag hanging in front, the tunnel cordoned off. There's a 32 on the flag.
We go right, Magpie tells us.
Why are they 32 and we're 13? I ask.
The tunnels were dug out at different times.
Oh, is 32 unlucky also?
She snorts. I wish.
Strange. So one tunnel in the same area is a good one, and ours is a dud. Great. I eye the differences in the tunnels. 32 seems to be larger, the walls of the tunnel itself a little more smoothly hewn. 13 is rough, the entrance low. I hope that's a good sign, but something tells me it's not. Kip pulls the rope from his pack and holds one end out to me. Right. I loop it through my guild belt the way I've been shown and pass the end on to Lark, who's going to be our navigator. She belts herself in, and as she does, I shrug my pack off and pull out the shield that's part of my assignment. I've got my short staff for a weapon, but I can't use it while holding a shield. As the bulwark, my job is to protect, not strike, so I strap it back to my pack again. When we're all roped together, Kip pulls out his tiny sword. He grins up at me and then licks his eyeball. I think that's a sign that he's ready to go. We all look ready, with our packs on our shoulders and Gwenna at the rear. I glance back at Magpie to see where she's going to be as we head in, only to see that she's dropped her pack. As I watch, she sets down her lantern and unrolls her bedding. She reclines on it with a yawn, her pack working as her pillow. What are you doing? I ask. I thought this wasn't the place. Everyone turns to stare at her. Magpie flicks a hand down toward our tunnel.
You're going to want to head that way for about another hour or two and see what you can find. I'll wait here. I stare at her in shock. The others do too. I'm pretty sure that's not what our leader is supposed to be doing.
You're not coming with us?
Meriden asks, voice timid.
Nope. I'll stay here and guard camp. Keep a light burning for you and all that.
She gestures at the cavern.
When you're ready to retire for the evening, come back in this direction. You can drop your packs here, too. Lighten your bags.
I'm not sure I like that suggestion, but when Lark shrugs and tosses her pack down, I do the same. I pull out my sleeping pallet and a change of clothes and set them down. My bag feels deflated and half-empty like this, and I'm pretty sure Hawk would have disapproved. But Hawk isn't here. Once our bags are settled, and I've got nothing in my hands but my shield, Magpie holds out the flag.
Tie this across your tunnel. It means that if another team comes by, they can't dig where you are. You've claimed it already.
Gwenna takes the flag and gives me an uneasy look. What's the point of doing this if we don't expect to find anything? She asks, her voice carefully neutral. Wouldn't it be wiser to continue our lessons up top?
A week.